Okay, we're ready. Good morning. It's 10 o'clock a.m. Wednesday, March 21st, 2007. The commission today is meeting in the commission hearing room, State Capitol, 12th floor in Bismarck, North Dakota. I'm Commissioner Susan Wefald, President of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. And with me today are Commissioners Kevin Kramer and Commissioner Tony Clark. I would like to apologize that we're just a few minutes late because we had been in a Commissioner Clark and I were invited to speak to a group of high school students today, and it happened to be over in the county commission. What do they call that building anyway?
Association of Counties building.
Right. Yes, it's very nice over there. It was a good visit with them, but of course they were running a little late to get us on, and so we apologize that we're a little bit late today.
I declined that invitation in deference to the meeting.
Quite honestly. Thank you. Anyway, so are there any other opening remarks from
I've learned my lesson about priorities on meeting day. Anyway. None, right. Just welcome. I move passage of the items in the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, moving to SW1. I move the commission issue a notice of hearing in the application of Otter Tail Corporation, DBA Otter Tail Power Company, for fuel cost adjustment recovery of Midwest ISO, Day 2 Energy Market Cost, case number PU05131.
Second.
The notice of hearing states that a public hearing on this matter will be held beginning May 22, 2007 at 9 a.m. in the commission hearing room here in Bismarck. The three issues that are going to be considered are whether the interim accounting treatment authorized for recovery of day two market costs is appropriate and should be continued, or whether a different or modified accounting treatment should be required. Two, whether a percentage of wholesale revenues derived from off-system energy sales should be shared with retail customers, and whether any amounts already collected should be refunded with interest. This case is a result of the commission has been investigating Otter Tail's fuel cost adjustment, and we've also, quite frankly, been investigating MDUs and Excels as well. This is because when they became part of the market of MISO, the Midwest ISO, just about 2 years ago, numerous new charges started to flow through their fuel cost adjustments that related to costs for the new market. And the commission received a staff memo on this issue in December of this year. Of 2006, which gave a, they had first taken a look at Otter Tail's fuel cost adjustment and gave the commission information on that. During the time of that, when we were discussing that memo, there was interest from a group of interveners who were large industrial users of Otter Tail's power here in the state of North Dakota. And they had some concerns that they expressed to the commission at that time. They put in writing later on, and early this year they asked if they could intervene in this case. The commission agreed to that intervention at that time. And that has led to this hearing that is being scheduled today on May 22nd of 2007.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
SW2. What I'd like to do with SW2 is I'd like to hold it over to the admin meeting to give the commissioners a chance to discuss one additional issue that we may want to incorporate into this order. And so we can vote on it at the administrative portion of the meeting after we make a decision at that time. Basically, what we would be considering at the admin portion is the motion to adopt the findings and fact conclusions of law and order issuing a quarter certificate and a route permit authorizing construction of Tatanka Wind Power's 230 kV transmission line in Dickey and McIntosh counties of North Dakota. And they are proposing that they would, build approximately 12 miles of line in North Dakota, and that the transmission line would be constructed using H-frame variety structures with an average height of 70 feet. the commission has spent quite a bit of time. We held a hearing down in Ashley on this particular subject. Then we held another informal hearing. Everything seems to be in order on this, and the commission, I think, is ready to act on this today, but there is one additional issue that the commission that I would like to have the commission discuss before we take final action on this order today. I believe that's all the items in my portfolio, and so next we would go to Commissioner Kramer.
Thank you. KC1, I move the commission adopt the order approving the application of MDU Resources Group, Inc., to acquire the stock of Cascade Natural Gas Corporation, case number PU06491.
Second.
This has been a well-publicized move on the part of MDU. Last July 8th, the boards of directors of MDU and Cascade entered into an agreement for MDU to purchase Cascade. It is a cash purchase of Cascade stock at $26.50 per share. It was, as I said, approved by both boards of directors. It was then approved by over two-thirds of the shareholders, which was a requirement for the acquisition to move forward. Of course, they need to receive approval of this commission as well as Minnesota, the states of Washington, and Oregon. Cascade serves 93 communities in the Pacific Northwest. Their headquarters is in Seattle, Washington. I have set out a fact sheet that is a rather complete timeline of events. The deadline for approval by the North Dakota and Minnesota commissions is April 8th for this merger to continue. Minnesota has already approved it. That's what we are doing today in North Dakota. There are a number of things that I like about this particular business acquisition for MDU. The only issue to be considered for the commission is whether or not this is in the public interest. I believe that it is in the public interest. I think the filing by MDU spells it out quite nicely. We did have an informal hearing as well. A couple of the highlights for me are the acquisition nearly doubles Montana Dakota Utilities and Great Plains gas customers. It is a very high growth area. It is a area that is growing 3 to 5% per year. There's no negative impact on rates. Could conceivably, I think, have a favorable impact at some point as the corporate allocation of costs, of course, will be distributed by nearly twice as many customers. So that's got tremendous impact, I think. I think one of the best things I like about this as a regulator as well as a citizen of our community is that one of our own companies continues to grow. And one of the things, as we know about the history of MDU, is that it has diversified its business tremendously in recent years. Well, one of the impacts, of course, of that diversification is that it dilutes its standing as a utility, and this actually helps reverse that dilution a little bit. And so I like to see MDU getting more utility assets and customers. So with that, I think everything's in order. It was a very good filing. We had a good hearing, and I think it's time to approve this and move it forward. I might just as a matter of, I guess, technicalities, Cascade Natural Gas will become a subsidiary, a wholly owned subsidiary of MDU Resources, whereas Great Plains and Montana Dakota Utilities, of course, are divisions of MDU.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
KC2. I move the commission conditionally approve revision number 19 to surface coal mining permit KRSB 8603 held by Dakota Westmoreland Corporation to add 524.3 acres to this permit for the Beulah Mine and to update the appropriate sections of the permit to reflect mining in the added area.
Second.
As the motion states, this is an addition of 524.3 acres to an existing permit allowing mining of a new pit, a sequence known as the Silver Pit at the Beulah Mine. There will be some construction of some 6 sedimentation ponds and several diversions that will begin shortly after this revision is approved. The pre-mining and proposed post-mining land use of the lands that will be disturbed in the added area is native grassland and hayland. Everything seems to be in order. There is, as you might have noticed, a condition on the approval, and that's just simply to clear up some paperwork that's still kind of pending relating to surface and groundwater impacts of the mine.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
KC3. I move the commission approve bond riders that increase the amount and acreage under self-bond number SB9501-1 and approve collateral bond number CB9501-4 that covers all permits held by the Coteau Properties Company for the Freedom Mine. I further move the collateral bond number CB9501-3 be canceled effective March 22, 2007.
Second.
This is as a result of course, increasing costs of bonding. We also have the 10% collateral bond. Maybe just back up a little bit. Of course, the Coteau is self-bonded for the most part. By our rules, we allow 90% self-bonded, then require 10% to be surety or collateral. They do collateral. That CD is coming due, which explains kind of the timing of some of this, and there are clearly some increased costs. So this is just to address all of that. There are a few acres as well being added to the permit that will add a little bit to the cost. But for the most part, it's just the cost of doing business being added to. So anyway.
Right, and their bond, their self and collateral bonds total $68 million. They wish it was $68,000.
Yes.
$68 million to cover all permits at the Freedom Mine. The amount of the new collateral bond is $8,800,000, and the amount of Coteau's self bond is increased to $79,200,000, with Basin Electric as a third party guarantor. And so the new minimum bond amount is going to be $84,089,817, but actually they're going to be providing more bond than that. They're going to be providing $88 million in bond, which includes around $4 million contingency for future increases in reclamation costs that they can see already are going to be coming along. So, yes, this is a result of an increase in reclamation costs, but it seems like it's been handled very well. I asked yesterday, Jim, in our memo, it said that they would be delivering a check for $2 million for the collateral bond to the commission yesterday. That was delivered to the commission, so everything is in order.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
KC4, I move the commission forward a nomination from the Falkirk Mining Company to the Federal Office of Surface Mining for consideration for the 2007 Excellence in Surface Coal Mining Reclamation Awards.
Second.
This is always a fun one when we have one of these. This one could almost be in Commissioner Wefald's portfolio, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. Earlier in the year, OSM announced their National Reclamation Awards Program for 2007, and we, of course, then forward that information to the mining companies. Falkirk was nominated for one of the National Reclamation Awards for remining and reclaiming abandoned underground mines in its island mine area. And what this award is for the remining, stabilization, and reclamation of several abandoned underground coal mines, with a focus on two specific mines that were located in the island mine area. They employed special mining methods to safely mine through these workings, and they reclaimed about 31 acres to cropland that previously had little value due to the presence of sinkholes from past underground mining. They were able to recover more than 700,000 tons of coal that would have otherwise been left in the ground. And so, as you know, when we, in our AML division, we put a lot of effort and resources into reclaiming abandoned mines. This 31 acres, it won't have to be reclaimed by AML, but instead was remined and then reclaimed by Falkirk. And we certainly like to see that type of a practice. They're to be congratulated, and we certainly wish them the best at OSM as we forward this nomination to the federal government.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. KC5. Got more paper than usual today. I move the commission acknowledge the letter of intent, shorten the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent and a siting application to one day, and assess a filing fee of $100,000 due upon filing of an application in case number PU07108, Enbridge Energy Limited Partnership's proposed 36-inch liquid petroleum pipeline in Pembina County, North Dakota.
Second.
I believe this will be the final Enbridge letter of intent for a little while, but we did. In fact, the one 2 weeks ago, this was the Southern Lights pipeline, which is in the exact same corridor, will be laid right next to this one. That's a 20-inch pipeline. This is a 36-inch pipe. Last week's Southern Lights pipeline is quite directly attached to North Dakota and Montana crude because our North Dakota pipeline, Enbridge pipeline, with the new pumping stations that are being upgraded and the new 52 miles, feeds right into that one and then down into Clearbrook.
Tell them the name of this one.
This one is called the Alberta Clipper. And the Alberta Clipper, the Alberta Clipper is properly named because it is largely designed to bring that tar sands oil from Hardisty, Alberta, down to all the way into Wisconsin. So to Clearbrook and beyond, markets beyond. That's significant for a number of reasons. I mean, for one, it's significant because it's 450,000 barrels per day that they anticipate putting into that pipeline to meet growing refinery demand in the Midwest, in the Midwest markets. It has the same orientation, I guess, as the what's becoming familiar to us as the Keystone Pipeline Project, the Trans-Canada Project, the same type of oil, except a little different route. That oil is going down into the Illinois, into the Chicago markets. It has tremendous impact, obviously, in continually trying to become more energy independent, more independent of Middle East oil, and take advantage of the tremendous resources up in Alberta. But it also helps North Dakota refiners significantly, I think, because although we've opened some bottlenecks now for Western North Dakota and Eastern Montana oil into Clearbrook, Minnesota, Clearbrook, Minnesota is quickly becoming a bottleneck. And you can't pump any more oil into a brick wall, and so this actually opens those markets deeper into the Midwest. And so it's a pleasure to see all this. One of the things that I did was I had Pat put together a kind of a spreadsheet, if you will, or a document illustrating the business that the investments that Enbridge has made and is making here in the last couple of years, and it's quite a significant investment, adding up to $156.8 million to expand its capacity to move domestic oil. And I consider anything in the North American continent, especially Canada, to be domestic, compared to Middle East. Middle East oil. So it's an exciting time. As I said, this corridor has been sited previously and is next to pipelines that have been sited. This is only a letter of intent. In fact, according to the letter, they don't even have all of the business necessarily, but they are very optimistic based on what the shippers have asked for and certainly what the refiners have asked for.
This, of course, is just the very first step when we acknowledge a letter of intent. But if we would receive these applications in the near future, both of them, the one we did previously and now this Alberta Clipper one, which are in the same route, we would probably hold the hearings, you know, simultaneously up in Pembina County to handle this because it's significant. It's 28 miles of pipeline, two pipelines right next to each other, two new pipelines going through the state, and looking forward to good hearings on those matters when those applications come in.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Commissioner Clark.
Thank you. There are just two items in my portfolio. TC1, I move the commission approve the roving grain buyer license application for MG Grain LLC, Minot, North Dakota, effective March 9th, 2007.
Thanks.
Typically, we put roving grain buyer applications on the consent agenda. This one is a little bit higher profile than most in that it is the roving grain buyer application, the licensee is going to solicit grain purchases that are going to be delivered to the facility that they're building at the Minot Intermodal Center. Those of you who watch the media will know that this received some attention recently, and so we shifted it to to this portion of the agenda. They anticipate that they're going to have facilities to license later in 2007. Their license and corresponding bond with this will allow them to solicit up to 100,000 bushels of grain, so they will be able to purchase without the facility in place, but be able to get going.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. TC2, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE07109 granting the request of Nietzsche Elevator LLC to discontinue business at Nietzsche, North Dakota, effective March 20th, 2007.
Second.
This is based on a commission receiving a request to discontinue business at this facility.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That ends the items in my portfolio.
The commission will be holding an informal hearing this afternoon at 1:30, and that has to do with an MDU tariff that will be is before the commission. Other than that, I would just like to say, ask if there's any questions.
To go back to the item SW1 about Otter Tail, was there a complaint raised by the corporate interveners that they're paying too much?
I don't know if I would call it a complaint. They had certain issues that they wished to raise at the hearing. And that's why they chose to intervene.
It's just an intervention.
It's just an intervention.
It's based on MISO.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, the wind power thing that's going to be discussed at the administration, at the admin agenda, which I can't stay for because there's a hearing on property tax caps going on in about half an hour. How much are they spending on that line, you know?
Yes, I believe it is $6 million. And then another million, just a minute, let's see if I can find that in here. My staff, yeah. The estimated cost of the transmission line and related facilities is $6 million, and the estimated cost of the interconnection with Montana Dakota is $1 million. So there is an interconnection with an MDU line in South Central North Dakota, and that would cost $1 million, and the estimated cost of the transmission line and related facilities is $6 million. So you see that's costing, it's about 12 miles of line, a little more than 12 miles, so it's about a little more than $500,000 per mile in that part of the state.
And that's about average for that type of thing?
Well, it just depends. You know, in that part of the country, it's probably average. In other parts of the country, I've seen estimates as high as $2 million a mile.
And it depends on the voltage of the line. Well.
This is a 230 kV line that will be going in.
All right. One other question on kind of a related topic. The legislature capped that indemnity fund at $6 million. Given what's happened with RAME, was that a wise thing to do in retrospect?
Well, the argument cuts both ways, and here's what you'll probably hear. Is folks who were opposed to the cap being implemented will say, see, an insolvency can happen anytime, so we need a larger fund. Folks who voted to reduce the cap from $10 million to $6 million, we'll say, here we have an insolvency, and the fund appears to be more than adequate to cover the insolvency itself. So I don't know that there's going to be any sort of public perception one way or another that this in particular has an impact on that law.
Do you have any particular feelings on it yourself, if $6 million is going to be enough?
Well, it's hard to say because there's no actuarial science behind this, to be honest with you. And there doesn't appear to be any actuarial science behind this in any part of the country at all. I mean, one of the things that the legislature did when setting up and is information that we gathered for them was information on indemnity funds around the country and how much is required as far as being put into these funds. I mean, the reality is if you had a massive elevator run into completely unexpected financial problems, a CHS-type company, you probably couldn't have an indemnity fund large enough anywhere in the country to cover all of the losses. That's what makes this somewhat different than a true insurance pool. I mean, you're not insuring like you would do an actuarial study of a life insurance company. It's the legislature taking a political calculation that we want to provide some sort of safety net for our farmers in this particular type of transaction. So while it's sometimes called an insurance fund, it's really not a true insurance pool. Here they've made the call that they believe that there's the political will out there to build this self-funded fund up to a $6 million cap and then have it gone. I personally don't have strong feelings on whether it should be 10 or 20 or 6. It's a political calculation that they need to make because it is a farmer self-funded fund.
Okay. If that's all the questions there are, the commission will meet again at 20 minutes to 11 for our administrative portion of the meeting.